Welcome back to Sports Talk here on the Big 870 WWL. Mike Dottiglia along with Charlie Long. And we'll be talking a lot of LSU basketball, baseball, maybe even throw Chris even a little bit of football question as spring drills fixing to kick off. And on our Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text line, the voice of LSU athletics, Chris Blair. Chris, thanks so much for joining me this afternoon.
Oh, Mike, always a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
I'll ask you right off the bat, best team you've seen in college basketball this year? My friend Tracy Coley sent me this, that it is estimated by one of the casinos that there'll be $3.3 billion wagered on March Madness. So there is an interest in it when you got that kind of dough flying around. But from the games you've called and seen, who is the best team you've seen all year?
You know, it's funny. I had this conversation yesterday during the midweek baseball game. And I told people, I said, you know, for me in the SEC, I just felt like Florida, their front line is so big and they just keep coming at you in waves and they'll dominate you on the glass. Now, obviously, they had a slip up in the SEC tournament, and I get it. They didn't shoot the ball extremely well. They really struggled from three. I would say they're, you know, the difference in this Florida team from a year ago that won the title, I think their guard play. And I think Boogie Fland is a really excellent guard. He's going to have an NBA career. But I don't think in totality is their backcourt play as good as it was last year. But their frontline play, I mean, from protecting the rim to altering your shot to dunking and making plays on their own offensively, I think Florida's good. But I got to be honest with you. As bad as it pains me to say it, I think the best team top to bottom is probably Duke. I think Duke's the team to beat.
Chris, we talked to John Brady last week, and, you know, John being a former coach, and I get it, and asking about the situation with Matt McMahon. You know, he was, Mike, I'm sort of caught there because this is a bottom-line business. You are hard to win, and that's what it's all about, and you know that going in. But he said, you know, they're extenuating Sanchez here when you look at it with the injuries that happened to basically your top two players and the way things worked out this year of why some people are saying, hey, listen, just move on. There is the point of, well, you know, we don't have the money to do it. Come on. It's like looking under the couch for money. LSU's going to find money. If that's the major problem, they'll find money to bring in a new coaching staff. But your thought this year on what happened with Matt, and I know injuries played a part of it, but for a lot of people is we don't see the improvement that we thought we were going to see this year. And just even taking out the injuries part of it, do you think Matt returns for 2026, 2027?
You know, I think there's a good possibility of that, Mike. And I'll say it because, I think the loss of DeDon Thomas was huge. And it happened after they had a ton of momentum and even had lost Jalen Reed, who was expected to be, and I think would have been, a very effective post player in league play. So now all of a sudden you lose him. Okay, you readjust, you reset. And then you lose to Don Thomas. So I'm not going to belittle the loss of those two guys because they were expected to be, in Don's case, he was expected to be and was well on his way to being a 14, 16-point guy. So now I can take that 14 to 16 points, and I'll give you, I'll shave six. Let's say he scores 10. I can point to about five games where the win-loss in SEC play is going to be different. And again, is that enough to satisfy? I don't know. Eight wins, nine wins in the SEC, would that have been? So I think there's a little bit to that. And I also would argue that we saw a true freshman in Jalen Reeves who was absolutely, use whatever analogy you want to use, but basically he was thrown to the wolves to open SEC play and had played kind of a sparingly, get a couple of minutes, let's get you some experience. And I've watched that young man develop from the start of January, where I thought he might play to give DeDon a quick 3-minute, 2-minute breather, to suddenly he's starting. Suddenly he's averaging, you know, 30 plus minutes a game. And it was tough in the early going. But I'll give Jalen a ton of credit, and I'll give his coaching staff some credit too. I think if you asked anybody coaching around the SEC, hey, who was a freshman that wasn't on your radar in January that you certainly know about now? And I think Jalen Reese would be one of those. So those are two examples of development that I think went in the right way. But I'm not going to argue the point that it is a wins and losses business. That is what it is. And I think you said it best. I mean, every coach who gets into this understands that. And there's very few of them that get to call their own exit, if you know what I mean. Very, very few. No matter if you can have success somewhere, go somewhere else and not have success. If you get to call your retirement, my advice to you is call your retirement and call it a day. Because if you're able to do that once in a lifetime, you're extremely lucky in the coaching business.
Chris, you don't get to go watch at retirement. Put it to you that way. You get shown the door in most spots. For LSU baseball, and I get the angst of a lot of LSU fans, because this is an unusually kind of pieced together team this year and how they've lost. You get off to a red-hot start. You 8-0. Man, you're knocking the cover off the ball. The midweek pitching, matza. But over the weekend was really good. And then all of a sudden, bats get cold. The defense kind of falls apart out in the field and also at catcher. And there are a lot of different variances. And this is a huge challenge for Jay Johnson. And one like we've not seen before at his time frame at LSU, how you can kind of get the car back on the road, because it almost needs like a little bit of a realignment somewhere along the way. But you can see it's been challenging on Jay Johnson. And just by the way he answers some questions, you could tell it's gotten under his nerves.
Yeah, I mean, I think so. And I think you put it out there the way I would describe it, in the sense that you kind of knew in 23, and I've said this before, I think I've even told you this, you know, in 23, if you don't make it to Omaha, and I'm not saying winning the title, but if that team hadn't made it to Omaha, I think that would have been a disappointment. I mean, the known talent that we got to see as the season went on, it was kind of like, if this team with Dylan Cruz and Paul Skeens and Gavin Dugas and Cade Below, if these guys don't get to Omaha, to me, that's a disappointment, because I think the brotherhood was there. I think the talent was there. Now, I give Jay and his staff a lot of credit last year, because that's not the way I felt about the 25 team. I thought they were talented, and I thought they had a chance to get better as the year went on. But I don't know that in late April, early May, I was like, yeah, this team's a lot for Omaha. And so I say all that to say, I think each team is different. And I think in this era of transfer portal, I think if you're coaching football, basketball, it doesn't matter what sport, if you're re-overhauling a roster every single year, there's going to be some years where you got a little more than you thought you were getting, and there's going to be times where you got a little bit less, and sometimes maybe a lot less. You know, I think you can look at the Kentucky Wildcat basketball team this year and see how everybody was screaming $20 million for a roster. This is the best ever. Well, I don't know about that. Outside of Otega, Oway, I think there was a lot of – but so I don't want to get off on a tangent. I think Jay is certainly – he's the right guy for a job like this in a time like this, Mike. And the reason it is what you just pointed out. He is nonstop work. And I've said that. I mean, he has no hobbies. I joke with him all the time. It is baseball 24/7, 365. He goes on vacation to watch baseball and usually has something to do with a recruit that he's looking at, even in the summer months, even when he comes back from winning the title two times in 4 years. And so I think there is going to be a little work, but I'm just not willing to throw in the towel and say, okay, better luck in 27. I just don't think this team is the team, because I've seen him do amazing things in 2022. When I really thought, I'm not sure if this team's going to make a regional, which I know is blasphemy in South Louisiana. But there was a lot of challenges to that team, and lo and behold, they didn't make it to a super, but they almost did. Then I watched him do it with great talent and managing that talent in 23. I watched him understand very quickly in Chapel Hill in that regional in 24 what was missing, and then I saw him go add that. So again, is this team? You know, I think Doug Thompson said it last night on the broadcast. I mean, you're going to be somewhere around 14, 15, 16 losses before the season is done at LSU, and you can still win a title. That's a title team's record I'm talking about. So it's a little early to hit the panic button. There's going to be work. There's going to be some changes. We've already seen it. I saw it this past weekend at Vanderbilt with some changes, you know, in the lineup and as also position players. That's going to continue, but I would feel really good, and I'm not putting down any other coaches out there in college baseball, but there is nobody going to outwork Jay Johnson. And now that He's really focused on getting the offense more consistent. He's really, I mean, he told it today during the press conference with the media. I mean, they are meeting regularly about what's the best pitchers, what's the best rotation, how to put this in there. I mean, it's not just we'll check on it after this weekend. That's a conversation that's happening every single day. So for that reason, let's just enjoy baseball. Like, I'll come back and join your show in May. And if we're we're not doing well, then I'll say, Mike, you and everybody else nailed it. But I just have a statement being around Jay as much as I have. And Jay, we trust. And I think this team has got enough talent. They just got to get it going.
Let's see if they can get hot late. Because baseball is a strange game where there's a lot of stock market to it. Ups and downs. And you can get hot all of a sudden at the right time. We saw this when Ole Miss won the title a few years back. Same thing with Mississippi State. They got hot late, and it brought them a national championship. Can he do it this year with this team? I think that's what a lot of fans are, because you haven't really seen as much maybe play a little bit erratic like you've seen so far early. Charlie?
So, Chris, I think I wanted to toss this out there. Maybe it was a little bit underreported. You had to replace basically your entire infield outside of Steven Milam from last year. And last year's defense was just the best maybe in LSU history, I think percentage-wise, as far as fielding percentage goes. The defense has kind of struggled this year by comparison. And Mike and I kind of have an ongoing joke that, you know, defense in baseball is kind of like offensive line play in football. Like, when it's great, like, you kind of take it for granted. And then when it's bad, everyone wants to criticize it and go nuts about it. But specifically, one of the things that we had talked about entering the year, Chris, was that maybe this pitching staff didn't have the top-end talent of a Cade Anderson or an Anthony Ianson like last year's championship squad did, but they had a lot of great depth on the mound. And I think that's kind of hasn't shown up just yet. And there's plenty of time left. And like you mentioned, don't hit the panic button by any stretch of the imagination. You trust Jay Johnson to get that offense rolling. The one thing I'm kind of interested to see is who really does step up on the mound. You know, your weekend starters have been mostly good. This past weekend in Vanderbilt was not so good, outside of maybe William Schmidt. But you're looking for the other pieces, especially in the bullpen, to really step up and kind of provide Coach Johnson not just the reliable outs in the midweek, but also the reliable outs after you get past Cason Evans, after you get past Cooper Moore, after you get past William Schmidt.
No, I would agree. I mean, I think you're dead on in all of that assessment. I mean, you know, I missed a good portion of the early part of the baseball season due to basketball, which is common. So when I finally picked up and was in Nashville this weekend for a full series in SEC play, you know, I had some guys there ask me about this team, almost in the same kind of question you posed. And I said, I want you to look at my field chart right here. And I have a cheat chart that has everybody's position on the field defensively. I said, I want you to point out to me how many guys played in Omaha last year. And that's kind of the way I look at it. You were without Stanfield for all but two games until this past weekend. And, you know, Jay and I have had this conversation a bunch, and he told it to me last night in the dugout. You know, Stanfield might be the most underrated player on that championship team a year ago. Let's not forget, he led he was atop the SEC in doubles. He also led the team in batting against SEC pitching. And he kind of was under the radar. And you're kind of, going back to that offensive line analogy, you just count on him catching baseballs out in left field or center field or wherever he is. So you're without him for, you know, a large portion of the non-conference, certainly as the team's got a little more difficult. But you've got Steven Milam, who, again, what, five errors last year? I think he's yet to have one officially this year. You're replacing who I thought was also underrated in Dickinson at second base. You've tried a couple of different guys there, including Ruckert, the freshman right here in Baton Rouge, who I think is going to be a great one. Will he eventually be the everyday second baseman over the next couple of weeks when you could use a Seth Dardar's bat as a DH? Maybe so. You know, you had a stalwart. Another one that comes away is the catcher from last season, Luis Hernandez. Yeah. I mean, look at what he did in Omaha, both as a catcher and both as, you know, an offensive player. So, yes, it is so true. And our good friend Ed Ogeron has said it a ton of times. Like, when you get to the top, there's going to be some missing pieces that following year. And again, nobody wants to hear that. And I get it. You think once you get the machine going, you just plug and play. Let's go. Let's just get us some new ones. Let's put these guys in. I think it's a little more tough than that. But again, I go back to Jay Johnson's right now probably figuring out where he needs to have guys in the order and where he needs to have them on the field, maybe a little later than he did last year. But I'm not willing to at this point go, yeah, this is going to be one you just throw the season and, you know, try to develop your young players. And then, you know, next year they'll be ready to go. And frankly, I know for a fact Jay's not going to take that avenue either. So this team is going to get better. And I think this team will start to solidify. I just think it's going to be later. And I understand that because fans look at it and go, you know, in 23, we pretty much had our everyday position players. I think pretty much by the second or third weekend of SEC play last year, certainly before April hit, you kind of had your everyday players with some guys getting a day off here and there. I think we're a little later in that period of having those decisions made, but watch out if they get them because, you know, Mike's point to Ole Miss a couple of years ago, I think about a Texas team that I watched last year and that I've watched a couple of times via television this year that looks unbeatable. Yeah, that's baseball's a fickle game.
Yeah, in a lot of different ways. Real quick on LSU spring football, I think all eyes are going to be at LSU if any team gets looked at across college football. I think I have every reporter and their brother over here covering LSU football. But and you know what? I think Lane Kiffin likes that because he would rather the attention be on him than his players. And that's not a negative way. I think he just wants his players to go out and play. If there's any type of hot spotlight, hey, I'm willing to take it. You guys just go do your job. But I think offensive line play and the quarterback situation is going to be the two areas that everybody's going to be focusing on.
No, 100%. And you and I talked about it, you know, a month or so back when we were over in Thibodeau. Yeah. I mean, I think that those, the offensive line play, what have they been able to get out of the portal? What did they keep and how did it develop is going to be, I would think, probably question number one. And then quickly, 1A is going to be the quarterback. But I think people feel pretty good about, you know, what they have in the quarterback room. That doesn't always translate to what they want to see on the field, but I think they feel a little bit better. I think the offensive line is a little more of a question mark. But I got to tell you guys, I mean, I keep seeing this on social media. I know you were alluding to it. It's like, what's the most hated team in college football? And it's like, oh, it's LSU and it's Coach Kiffin. And I got to be honest, in the last 3, 4, 5 weeks, now that spring football is really starting to get going, let's do it. I'm all for it. Let's be the. I'm going to be the heel on the radio. I can already tell you. I've already made that decision. We're going to be the bad guys. We're going to be the NWO, of college football. But I think you're right. I think that's probably some of the genius of Coach Kiffin is the fact that, you know, he's got the aw-shucks attitude. He can get fiery when need be, but he constantly keeps that focus off his players, and he's not afraid to take it. Sometimes he'll engage, sometimes he won't, but he wants that focus and the spotlight and the heat and the pressure all to be on himself. Let's go out and let the players play football. But yeah, I mean, if there's a place that doesn't mind being the bad guy, it's LSU. We'll be the bad guy if that's the way you want to paint us.
And all attention paid on you. Chris, I will let you go, but I'll give you this one piece of advice. Write that wide receiver chalk depth chart. Do it in pencil that you can erase it because we got no idea how any of those guys are going to work out. But that's the one area of a lot of, man, I don't really know. And I think we find out a little bit pretty quick with the spring drills and then the summer drills. But, man, all those new receivers, that's going to be one right in pencil.
I'm with you. I'll be there for spring ball and fall camp, and then maybe by the first game against Clemson, we'll kind of know who to expect.
Chris, thanks so much for joining us, bud. Always appreciate it.
Thanks, Chris.
You got it, gentlemen. Have a great rest of the week.
Right. The voice of LSU Athletics. And, man, Chris, he does a fantastic job. And, you know, when you're following somebody, you know, has done it for so many years, Chris Blair has really filled those shoes so, so well here as the voice of LSU Athletics.